It's Thursday, August 15th, 2013. You're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast about retro video games and sometimes some other things. You're listening to episode 26. I'm feeling a little stabby. Running time for this episode is 46 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast where only one of us is a terrible husband. My name is Jeremy.
I'm Zach.
And I'm the married one.
So you lost your name in the marriage, right? That's how that works?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like in Doctor Who where Rory becomes a pond. Except I just gave up my entire identity. It got absorbed in some sort of slug-like.
Isn't that how marriage works, though?
Well, kind of. It actually happens before marriage. You just don't realize it until after the marriage, because that's when it becomes recognized by the government.
Video games, bros. They're sweet.
I agree.
What sweet video games, bros, have you been playing?
Have you ever seen Super Apartment Brothers?
No.
It's a series about Black Mage, a generic catgirl ninja, and basically Master Chief, who is retired and become an accountant, all living together in an apartment.
So it's 8-bit theater, but not by Brian Clevenger, because he became a success?
Yes. Also, it's a YouTube video instead of comics. Also, Mario's their landlord.
Well, of course. He's got all the coins.
But it's like 20 years later, so Mario's like 60 and...
What, and Sonic has like wives all over the country because of all of his rings?
Didn't I'd actually probably just pick those up and pawn them, so...
So that would make Mario poorer than Sonic.
Well, he's a landlord, although he is renting out a crappy
but
apartment.
But really, Sonic has more, like, cheap rings you would get for 5 tickets at an arcade. I think he doesn't get money for them, he gets tickets.
Yeah, they're golden in air quotes.
Ah.
It's, like, metallic colored plastic, maybe, or maybe anodized aluminum. Anyway, so, sweet video games, bros. Continuing my trend, I have been playing Animal Crossing. And Faster Than Light. I've unlocked all but 2 ships in Faster Than Light now, so...
That's spiffy.
I am missing the Rock Cruiser and the Crystal Cruiser, and from what I've read, the Crystal Cruiser is basically a series of random events that you had to get lucky to have happen.
What's the Rock Cruiser? Does it just throw a rock at them? Is it just Killer Croc and you ride on his back through space fighting Batman?
That would be amazing. Unfortunately, no. Rockmen are a race in there, and so when you say rock, you're actually referring to the race of people who are made of rock. So it's a cruiser manned by 3 rockmen that has damage resistance because it's made of rock.
So it's a Geodude mobile.
Actually, they're more like Graveler, maybe, because they got more arms. So.
Or Golem. Well, wouldn't the commanders be Golem because they're fully evolved? Somebody traded the other guys to somebody else. So
the problem is Golem means something in the English language, so it's not as strong a reference.
Also, all your crew of the same species are exactly the same unless you stick them on a compartment thing. And the more they're in that compartment, the better they get at being in that compartment. So.
I think you mean department?
Well, yeah, department is probably closer, but it's also a compartmentalized department. So.
Sweet.
What I really meant to say was a system, so you can put them on weapons, and if they stay on weapons for long enough, they get really good at charging your weapons somehow.
They're charging your lasers?
Yeah, or missiles. Missiles are about as useful as lasers. Anyway, so yeah, I haven't been playing a whole lot. I started the newest Professor Layton, but got all of 5 minutes in, was like, this is an amazing game, but not what I'm in the mood for.
That's the time travel one, right?
No, that's number 3. I'm on number 5 now, so...
Oh, wow. You don't have an iPad, huh?
I do not.
iPhone, so you can't play the Layton game they made for that.
Oh, did they make one specifically for
iOS?
It's
a sequel. You play as Layton's son, who is a detective, and as I understand, it's basically a Phoenix Wright game, and then Layton's brother is a prosecutor. So, as I understand it, first you play as the detective and get evidence, and then you're the prosecutor.
So,
No. It's
exactly Phoenix Wright.
As
but
I
not.
Understand it.
I love Phoenix Wright, but I've only ever played the first 3 games, and I don't think I've actually finished the 3rd one.
I hear the 4th one is terrible. That's
oh,
the one
really?
Where you play as Apollo Justice.
I have not played that yet.
Because Phoenix got in a horrible lawyer accident and got stripped of his lawyer license and became depressed.
He does that at the end of every game, though.
Well, then it, like, 60 years pass of him being depressed.
Oh,
so you play
okay.
as his protege.
Gotcha.
Apollo Justice. I've heard the Miles Edgeworth spinoffs are amazing.
I kind of want to play those, but... No, that's like... Phoenix almost dies in, like, every single game. In the beginning of one of them, he's on trial for murder, so...
Phoenix down! Phoenix down!
Oh, man, I would have been so happy if they cried that when he fell off the bridge. Which was on fire, by the way. So, yeah, Amusing tangents aside, I have not been playing a whole lot, mostly because of work and not sleeping.
Yeah, makes me glad I don't actually have to worry about work yet.
Zach, what have you been playing? Because I want to go last.
I've been playing... I actually finally got around to buying State of Decay, so I was playing a lot of that. I really enjoy that game. Though it is kind of odd that there are two different achievements for dying in two different ways.
Oh?
One is being torn apart by zombies, and another one is to go down in flames. I don't know how to get the one going down in flames.
Why is it odd that there are two... I don't know, I've played a lot of games where there are achievements for dying in a variety of ways.
Usually there's only an achievement for... on the 360 ones, at least. There might be an achievement for dying or losing, but it's usually not worth anything. Like, Dead or Alive 5 had an achievement for viewing every character's defeat pose. I've been playing a lot of that. I knew I had something else here, but it's mostly been that. I played a little bit of Brawl.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you played that of your own volition.
It was in the Wii, and I wasn't doing anything else.
I kept playing Super Smash Bros. Because I had the N64 out, and the cartridge was in, and I just kept picking that up before I did anything else.
That's a lot of why I play Mega Man X so much. It's right next to my bed.
Yeah, but that's an awesome game,
well,
so...
that end, I was just sitting there looking at it going, I don't want to do anything that takes any thought.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to... get out Dead or Alive or play Nazi Zombies or anything. I'm not in the mood for that. I'll just wreck some computers.
Well, and they only take like 3 minutes, or maybe five if you're doing a particularly long match. I actually do Gundam Battle Assault and Battlefront for that, because, or Ocarina of Time even. I can play those without thinking anymore, so. Meanwhile, I exposit about random other matters, but. So, Jeremy, you usually play interesting stuff to announce last.
Do Choose Your Own Adventures count?
Yeah, actually, I think they do. I haven't played one in a long time.
Well, I played Walking Dead 400 Days, which actually people are giving it a bad rap for not having any game to it. I didn't think it had any less game than the other Walking Deads.
So
you shoot zombies, you talk to people, you choose dialogue.
It's what, like a, is it like a visual novel or something?
No, it's like the other Walking Dead games.
The
main crux is that you're making decisions that affect the story.
Well, that's the gameplay.
Yeah. I agree, but a lot of people said that it has less game than the other one. I think because it's five stories and you pick what order you want to play them in, and they all sort of connect. They take place geographically in the same place, and some characters transfer over.
Could it be more along the lines of people are just so attached to those characters that they aren't necessarily realizing it, that there is the same amount of gameplay in both games?
I don't know. One of the things Walking Dead did really, really well was... put you into this character, and there was this interesting sort of conflict because the character clearly had goals, motivations, and history that you didn't know as the player. So there was this weird dramatic irony where you had to make choices not knowing what this character's past was.
Well,
and doing it five times is a little weird.
Well, I thought with that, I thought it was more along the lines of, yeah, this character has all this background and whatnot, but, you know, zombie apocalypse, that doesn't matter now.
It always matters. You are shaped by your past. And, well, yeah, and the zombie apocalypse is now part of your past. You're just now living in it.
And even in the first game, there is a character who confronts you over your past because they know about it.
Was that that old guy that I really wanted to just shove off a cliff?
No, the girl who's like,
oh,
hey,
okay.
I know who you are. I'm not going to tell them because they will flip out.
No, there's
can I trust?
In the first game, there's an old guy who you save his life, and then he tries to leave you behind.
Awesome.
For the zombies. I would have just shot him.
You get a drop of salt lick on him later.
So, it occurred
spoilers.
It occurred to me, both you and I, well, at least I, have played a game between the last time we recorded and now.
You want to talk about that now? It's also sort of choose your own adventure-y.
Yeah, I think it is similarly enough related and kind of a neat concept. And certainly, if nothing else, the mechanics were unique, but...
I feel like they have to have been used before, but...
I've never encountered them.
Slouching Towards Bedlam, which is a Twine game. I haven't actually played it, but it's sort of got a butterfly effect thing, where as you play the game, you sort of learn the best move is to kill yourself at your first choice.
So, the game we're talking about is one we mentioned last week, I think.
Yeah, Save the Date.
Yeah, Save the Date is a visual novel-style story with branching paths in which you try to save the date. And we're not meaning save it from awkward social disaster. We mean actual disaster with giant octopi, ninjas, drive-by shootings, cars that inexplicably run into you every time you leave the goddamn building.
Gas explosions.
Yeah, gas explosions. I forgot
Dolphins.
About those. And you survive all of these somehow.
A plane that just crashes into her house if you don't go on a date.
meteors, alien abductions.
At least when you get to aliens, even she's like, come on, the game developer isn't even trying now. Aliens?
A statue falls on her in that same scene if you let it end differently.
Oh, so. I never got to a point where a statue fell on her. A meteorite definitely fell on her.
That sounds like really poor storytelling.
Well, the point of the game is not to tell the story, but to explore the concept of how stories are told. So, spoiler, you can't beat this game. There is no actual way to beat it.
I argue that I did. I turned it off.
Yeah, well, that is how you beat the
and
game,
it's
is
not
to not
the
play.
The only winning move is not to play, but the only winning move is to stop playing.
Yeah, no, you have to play in order to win, but you have to know when to quit. So basically, you end up in a philosophical discussion about storytelling and yada yada yada, and it turns out that the best way to save this girl's life is to just never go on a date. The interesting thing, though, is the mechanics, which is you play the game and you can save any random time, but every time you play through, you have knowledge of your previous playthrough.
So you can tell her, hey, I'm a time traveler, and she's like, bullcrap you are, it's like, okay. Say a random number, and then you say, okay, then you quick load and say you're going to say whatever number. And she's like, what the hell? And then she's freaked out, and you have to get her to trust you, and...
Yeah, and it turns out that the best way to get around that is tell her that you're playing a video game, but there are a lot of other things that you need to do to earn her trust and go to a secret spot. Yeah, anyway. Moral of the story, it's an interesting concept, and explores the idea of non-linear storytelling, or, I guess, personal storytelling, based off of a public medium?
I think it's... What it's really talking about is... When you play a video game and tell your own story because it didn't really have one.
Yeah, which I do all the goddamn time.
So do I.
And as far as I'm aware, most people do that when they play games. Even Zach has affirmed that at one point, so...
But they do studies and they say it's rare.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know who they're polling.
I'm thinking people who don't play video games regularly,
well,
but...
Also, it might be rare among people who play video games. I mean, it's common among us because you look around. What is our secondary hobby as friends?
Role-playing.
Oh, yeah, I guess we're all also tabletop RPG players. Maybe that's why
so
we do it.
So it kind of goes, you know, together with that.
Well, I guess maybe not that's why we do it.
There's a little bit of
chicken
egg there. I think I am a role player because I am the sort of person that tells stories when I...
Well,
exactly.
Yes,
I think
but...
we do both of these things for the same underlying reason. But...
Yeah, I'm not trying to say that one came before the other. I'm pointing out that based on who we are as people, we tell stories. That's what we do. Whereas a lot of people who play video games, like the COD Squad or the Battlefield...
The COD Squad. I really want a bunch of fish running around with rifles now. Well, can you imagine a tuna just, like, waddling around on its back fins? Oh, man, that would be amazing. Anyway.
Well, you look at a lot of those guys like those... They may not even touch a story or implement a story for anything like that because it's just not in their nature. I mean, these are the same kind of people who wouldn't pick up a book unless you threw it at them, and they'd probably just throw it back.
On the other hand, I'm under the impression all humans are storytellers of some sort.
Well,
because I believe it's human nature to want to tell and experience
that
stories.
That might be the case, but they might be telling the stories of, you remember that time in Call of Duty? They're telling personal stories between people, experience stories. They're not telling.
They're not constructing narratives.
They're not constructing narratives like we are, that we do.
I agree there is a difference there, but I think given the right environment, even they would do it.
Well, my brother, and this drives
Lock
me
in
crazy,
a room.
We play MMOs together, and I always make backstories for all my MMO characters, especially superheroes, because I love that genre. But my WoW characters, too, because I like World of Warcraft, not just the game, but the world and the story there. And he doesn't, and it drives me insane.
Why do you care?
Because I'm like, okay, so I'm thinking this is what's going on. What are you thinking? We need 10 rat tails? Bro told me we need 10 rat tails. So.
The only reason I would see that would be a problem is if you're playing on an RP server.
Doesn't bug me, like, actively, but I always ask him, like, because I just think, of course you do. But he doesn't.
Well, no, and it... Okay, so I even experienced this when playing Tibia, because that was actually when I started introducing this into MMOs, if nothing else. I started making roleplay characters that, in my own head, had backstories and something. And I kind of talked in character even over the chat, but not really. But the fact that no one else played along with me made it really kind of, I don't know, it took a lot of the game for me knowing that no one else cared about the
story. I would have if
well.
I hadn't spent most of that game dead.
Or grinding for more levels.
Well, and that's
after I'd been killed and lost my level again.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of that particular system, but...
You remember
Travis killing everyone?
A few weeks after I posted that, a couple months later, we're finally going to tell the reason why I stopped playing Tibia. I got PK'd so many times, people who were getting revenge for me had to stop because they had too many people trying to kill them in retaliation for them killing me.
Did you ever get rooked?
I never got rooked, but like I would just be wandering around and die, then I'd gain that level back and die, and then gain that level back and die, and it wasn't monsters killing me, it was people.
For those unfamiliar, Rook and Tibia is the tutorial island. You lose experience when you die, and if you die so that you get so far down that you have to go back to the tutorial island, it's called getting rooked.
Which can happen to people who made enemies of particularly powerful guilds.
Which, inexplicably, we seem to be a part of, but I attribute that to Travis having way too much free time. And Chris. Well, the combination of Travis and Chris.
It was partly them, and then partly the fact that they were basically, like, the top two PKers on the server, because people kept killing me, and they told me, you know, if anybody PKs you, you come get us, we'll go get them. Within a week, all three of them, Chris, Travis, and Chris, all had red skulls.
Well, I told you about that one time Travis just stood out in front of the depot and self-destructed, right?
You did tell me about that. I remember the time you got stuck in a two-thing hole with a scorpion.
Anyway, moral of the story, Tibia is not really a heavy role-playing game, but even in that,
is
I made
it even
up...
still around?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Actually, the Kingdom of Loathing guys were just talking about it because they just discovered it and like, wow, this is almost exactly what we do, only with Super Nintendo graphics in Germany.
Well, fewer puns, but...
It wasn't a bad game, I just...
No.
Spending all your time grinding back to level 9 is kind of a pain in the
Actually,
ass.
Actually, my biggest problem was I spent way too much time grinding skills.
Yeah, well, I was a wizard! Back to Choose Your Own Adventures. Ryan North's To Be or Not To Be finally arrived.
Oh.
I was expecting 200 pages. Thing clocks in at 8:30. You can bludgeon people to death with it. It's 2 pounds. I got the soft cover.
This is a Choose Your Own Adventure?
Based on Hamlet.
Yeah, it's a
Holy... Crap!
Are you Hamlet or are you making decisions for everyone?
You can play as Hamlet, Ophelia, or Hamlet's dad, who is a ghost. Also, instead of a play within a play, it's a choose your own adventure within the choose your own adventure.
Oh,
and
God.
You play as Claudius making the choices in the choose your own adventure.
Wow, that's new.
That is amazing.
Also, he put in the pirate battle. It's really long because why would you skip the pirate battle if there was a pirate battle? Also, I tried to just, the choices that Shakespeare made are marked with skulls, so I tried to just follow it the first time, but when he gets in a fight with Laertes in Ophelia's grave, one of the options is feel yourself getting angry. Feel the gamma radiation flowing in. Say, I'm getting angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. And then you Hulk out and kill Laertes.
Oh God, that's awesome.
Also, one of the endings was I killed myself before my dad came to me and told me what was going on. So we got mad, but we were both ghosts. But after like 1,000 years, we patched things up just in time for an alien pod to land. And it seemed fine to everyone else, but it was actually full of invading ghosts. So we led the ghosts of Earth on a fight against the invading alien ghosts. This thing is amazing. Best $20 I ever spent.
Oh my God.
This does sound pretty awesome. And Hamlet is probably my favorite Shakespeare, so.
It's really good. And this book is really, really good.
I don't like Shakespeare very much.
That is the common opinion, and I...
If I had to pick one, I'd probably pick Macbeth, though.
Macbeth is pretty good.
I can definitely understand why people don't like Shakespeare, especially as you're forced to read it instead of watch it, but...
There's also an ending where you just go back to school and you hang out, you lose touch with all your old friends, but it's cool because you're friends with this new guy named Macbeth, and his dad totally has a job for you guys, so you go over to Scotland, and you never see your creepy uncle dad again.
Do you guys remember the, it was in the 90s, I think, that Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yes,
the modern day, put down your swords! Put down your swords. Sword, 9mm.
I love the close-up.
Oh my, yeah, it's...
I don't want to take too much of it, but just one more thing. As Ophelia, you can get into a chess game with Gertrude, and the whole chess game is part of the Choose Your Own Adventure.
Well, that's like 600 pages right there.
I don't think it's every possible move, because I think you start with limited pieces, or it narrates some of it for you.
Okay.
Well, also, didn't we establish
there are
how
lots of
many
permutations
moves
of a chess game.
There are in chess?
Though that would be limited a lot if Gertrude always made the same moves.
Moral of the story, there are a lot of moves in chess, so...
Yeah.
So anyway, that's been taking up a lot of my time. It's pretty sweet. It's $18 on Amazon, To Be or Not To Be. a choosable path adventure by Ryan North, because Choose Your Own Adventure is copyrighted, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought it was...
What is it actually called? A Choose Your Own Adventure?
A Choosable Path Adventure.
A Choosable Path Adventure. Someone copyrighted Choose Your Own Adventure?
Yeah, probably the people who published Choose Your Own Adventures.
See, I thought that was a generic term or a style of book.
I think it's just... We call it that because they're really the only ones that ever wrote it.
Well, I read a bunch of Goosebumps novels that were Choose Your Own Adventure, but...
Yeah, those were like Choose Your Own Goosebumps or something.
I had a couple of Animorphs books that did that.
Yeah, there were two, I believe.
Yeah, I had them both.
There were Animorphs that did that?
Yeah,
two of them.
Is one of my options morph into a saber-toothed tiger? Because that should be the only choice you ever need to make.
Well, no, they need to touch the animal to morph into them.
Does it count if they're dead? What if you touch a fossil?
No.
Their DNA thing is all kinds of screwed up.
One time they went back in time, but then because of magic, when they got back to the present, they couldn't turn into dinosaurs anymore.
Lame.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate weapon against the alien invaders. I can turn into a T-Rex.
So that's what I've been doing. I've gotten through most of Hamlet's paths. I haven't done much of Ophelia. I haven't done any of King Hamlet.
Oh, man. That seems like it would be the best. Just ghosting around. I wonder if there's one where you can just stalk Hamlet and watch him be crazy.
I believe there's one where you just become, like, Ghost Batman and you go around killing various evildoers as a ghost. But I haven't done them yet. Highly recommend it if you're at all into it. It's actually by the guy who's doing the Adventure Time comics, which I've been told are really good. He also did a Choose Your Own Adventure comic while he was writing the Choose Your Own Adventure Hamlet. That's supposed to be really good, but I haven't read it.
It does sound pretty awesome.
You mean played it, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's Red / Blade, so...
Both of you went back and played some more Castlevania too, right?
Yeah, I did, actually. You know, I definitely did. Still haven't given it a fair shake. I got, like, probably two or three more hours in. I got past the first mansion and a little further than that, and it just wasn't doing it for me. I could see why it was a fun game, but I maintained my previous opinion of it's fundamentally flawed, and they improved upon it later.
I spent another half an hour. I was right. This fall through a crack in the terrain is... And three more game overs later went, this, I'm going home.
But, like, the falling through cracks that aren't there, that's, like, the only time you ever lose progress of any sort in that game. I mean, I guess if you get a game over, you lose your hearts, and I think that got me in trouble once. But if they kill you, you just respawn, so they have to figure out something to do to you.
Well, and a lot of modern games are taking the approach of, why does anything bad happen when you die? And I actually think I prefer that approach, even though I prefer abysmally hard games, so...
Well, it doesn't matter. I prefer to go with the idea of variable difficulties.
All right, that was much shorter than I expected, but I guess let's stay on topic and let's talk about Zelda 2.
I have a lot to say about Zelda 2 in relation to Castlevania 2, and where I think the two could have been hybridized to be something amazing.
Neither one is very good.
I like both of them fairly well, but...
Zelda 2 is hard for me because it's, well, literally pretty hard, and I couldn't get very far. I just didn't want to play it anymore. It wasn't even that it was bad. It was just I couldn't get through Death Mountain, and I was done trying.
This is actually the second time I played it through, although I didn't actually beat it this time through. I have never found it terribly hard, but it definitely has a difficulty cliff in the positive direction, where you end up becoming a god because you have two or three new abilities. But those are really the only new abilities you ever get in the entire game, so...
With the lightning bolt and the fire?
Yeah, and downstabbing, which is way more useful than it would actually be in reality. So Zelda 2 is a game where you're Link, ostensibly, trying to save the princess from Ganon or something.
But Ganon's dead. You killed him at the end of Zelda 1, because we all killed him, right, bros?
You're trying to stop his resurrection, I guess?
Yeah, they put a spell on Zelda to send her to sleep, and you've got to stop them. Also, they want to kill you to resurrect Ganon.
So in a similar style to Castlevania 2, you now have, like, towns filled with NPCs, and...
Even the story is similar to Castlevania 2. He's dead, but he's coming back. You've got to stop it.
Yeah, although Castlevania 2 is, he's dead, and he might come back, but he's kind of f***ing you over in the meantime, so you got to stop it.
Whereas in Zelda 2, it's, he's dead, but he screwed up your girlfriend, so now you got to go get you got to go stop him from getting up.
But, yeah, so you have, like, NPC villages, and most of the villagers are useless.
Except for the one chick who invites you inside her house heal.
There's a grandma that lets you restore magic in all but the first town.
Yeah, but the very obviously busty lady in a red dress who invites you inside and you come back out with full health?
Yeah, but I guess your girlfriend isn't, like, in a coma. It's not you're cheating on... if you're like in a coma, right?
You're on a break.
Well, she's on a break from reality. Where this differs is mainly the world exploration. This has an overworld map, whereas Castlevania 2 had like these awkward interconnected screens that wanted to be Metroid, but you couldn't tell which way you were going.
I think the overworld map takes away a lot of the exploration element, because you can sort of see everything for miles. I mean, you know, oh, hey, there's a town right over there. Also, it just feels really big and sort of empty, whereas every screen in Castlevania 2 sort of serves a purpose.
It didn't actually occur to me to, I guess I never viewed it from that perspective, the fact that you can see everything where you're going. So a lot of your exploration is just kind of wandering into places.
The point of an overworld map is an abstraction. It makes the world feel a lot bigger than it actually is, because, you know, this tile of forest theoretically represents...
miles of forest.
Yeah.
Or at least a few hundred yards.
But in Zelda, all the action takes place on these 2D battle screens, very similar to Castlevania 2. So it just feels like it's making you walk to the next bit of progress, in my opinion.
That's true, and this also employs, similar to Castlevania 2, a level-up system in which you gain experience from killing enemies. You don't have to collect hearts, though. Hearts serve an entirely different purpose in this game.
But you lose all your progress if you game over, still.
Yeah, which is kind of... it's irksome. There are a lot of times when I almost died and just barely lived, but...
I just spent all my time dying again.
And as I said, this game is both extremely confusing and extremely difficult when you start. It gets less so almost immediately, but...
I didn't think it was that confusing. It's definitely difficult, but I mean, I found some towns and some caves and some dungeons. I mean, I can put two and two together, go to dungeon, collect item, kill guy with horse head.
Actually, I think my problem is I wandered the wrong direction at first,
but...
so...
there are bounds that are pretty obvious.
Yeah, I may have just been retarded, but...
the only thing that was hard was, in the towns, in addition to the healing and the magic, there's a wizard in every town that will teach you a spell. It's kind of hard to find them, because you have to talk to one random chick. And you can sort of see the pattern after a while.
Yeah, well, that's...
but it's always a house that's not open to you by default, and that's a little odd.
And I don't really understand why they chose to do that. It's not like it's really... adding that much gameplay time or anything to...
I think it was to encourage you to talk to villagers. That's all I can think of.
Once you get a certain number of them on the screen, they all start flickering in and out.
Well, and that's...
Super Dodgeball.
That's the NES for you, but...
and after the third town, some of them are just evil and turn into bats and kill you.
Yeah, there's
really?
That.
Yeah, that's kind of crap.
Well, and occasionally there are other random villagers, like Error, that you have to go talk to.
Well, you don't have to talk to Error. He's just like, I am Error.
Well,
and there's the one guy that's like, you can't pass here. You're not a villager. Oh, wait, you know random guy in a hut in the forest 10 miles away? I'll raise the drawbridge for you.
Well, there's Error, Bagu, and one other thing that's...
I found Error.
Yes, you did. You played this game. You found an Error.
Oh. Something interesting to the level-up system, at least to me, they changed it in the English version.
Oh, did they?
In the Japanese version, you got to choose what you leveled up every time. They didn't cost different things. But if you got a game over, all of your abilities would default to whatever you had the fewest points in.
Oh, okay.
So it encouraged you not to die even more. And I think why I don't like this game as much as I like Castlevania 2 is there's a harsh penalty for getting a game over. It's a little ironic. We were talking just last episode about how forgiving Zelda games are because they don't have lives. And if you fall in a pit, you just lose a heart. But this game has lives, and you lose one if you fall in a pit.
Well,
and if you lose all three of them, you have to start over from the beginning. You get to keep your items and any level-ups you've gotten, but you lose all the experience towards your next one and all your location progress.
Well, and as we've pointed out, this game is really the black sheep in this series. It is not a Zelda-style game, and I think the reason that it's not is because they realize how much better the previous formula worked. I like this game better than the original, but I like the idea of the original better than this game.
The most recent Zelda, Skyward Sword, actually kind of reminds me of this, because Skyward Sword has a huge emphasis on swordplay because of the one-to-one motion with the Wiimote. And this game also has a fair emphasis on swordplay. You have enemies who can attack high or low, and who can block high or low, and you've got to duck or rise appropriately to block them and attack them.
Well, you've also got the sweet bug thing, so... yeah, the little wrist-mounted beetle.
Yeah,
thing.
In Skyward Sword. I don't remember that in Zelda 2.
Oh, no, not Zelda 2.
How is that a comparison?
I was saying that's how it... I was attempting to illustrate that that's how it diverges from Zelda 2.
Sweet bugs.
Sweet bugs, bro. There are a lot of interesting puzzles in Skyward Sword. I feel like it did some newer things, or some things that hadn't yet been done with that, but...
See, I feel that way about Twilight Princess, but we've had the discussion about how I think Twilight Princess is the best.
Don't know if we've voiced this opinion on the podcast before, but neither of us consider Ocarina of Time to be the best Zelda game ever, so...
That's pretty good. I see why people say that, but... The ones since have been better. Although I need to give Wind Waker a fair shake. I think I will when the remake
Wind Waker's
comes out.
Pretty good. I think they also made there be less empty space between islands, which is really my only complaint with Wind Waker.
Yeah.
So. Ocarina of Time, though, definitely holds up well. It's still fun. It's just not as good as the ones that came after.
Plus, I own it on 3 consoles.
I'm honestly a bigger fan of Majora's Mask anyway, but I've been told I've been wrong on that many times.
Well, speaking of being wrong, Zelda 2, very different from these, even though I just said it's sort of like Skyward Sword. Skyward Sword pulls this off way better.
Indeed. The first time I played this game, honestly, I felt like the dungeons took a little bit of getting used to, maybe because I'm just so habituated to Zelda-style dungeons. These felt really weird to me.
They're really linear. The only way you can, you've got elevators, which I guess let you change elevation, but that's the only way you can really make the maze like at all. And you don't have a mini-map like you do in the previous one. But they're not as hard to navigate either, because there's only really 2 directions you can go.
Actually, thinking on it, they feel a lot like plain Metroid, but without a gun.
Yeah, I can see that. Actually, another thing I forgot I wanted to talk about, you keep the laser sword at full health from the first Zelda, but it doesn't really seem to serve a purpose here, because most of the difficult enemies are immune to it.
Yeah, well, it's basically to let you go through slimes and other peons, so...
That's already not hard.
Well, it makes it even easier, so now it's of trivial difficulty.
If it's of trivial difficulty, why put it in the way?
Because they didn't understand not to do that yet.
Well, and I think it's okay to have easy enemies that are easy to defeat, especially if you don't have load times associated with having to fight them.
And because you get
experience.
Is that
why you like having Cody in our Call of Duty games?
Yes, that's why. But on a deeper level, I think it's okay, especially if you want an action game, to have enemies that are easily dispatched. You also have to have difficult enemies so that there's some difference between them, and then you have even harder enemies, which are bosses. I think having the range is important.
Well, I'm a big fan of variety in enemies, regardless of difficulty. I just like a variety of different strategies that I have to employ. Sometimes that translates to difficulty.
This game doesn't really have that, because you basically have enemies with shields and enemies without.
Pretty much the only strategy you ever need to employ is hit Thane in face. Occasionally, after you get the power up to do so, you can hit Thane's on the head from above.
Actually, I only fought one boss. The strategy was stab him in the face. I mean, it's a big horse head guy. All you do is jump and stab him in his head. How are the other bosses in this game?
Lots of them are that. Some of them are slightly puzzle-based, but a lot of them involve platforming more than actual puzzles or anything, as the more traditional Zelda style tends to be. You actually end up just stabbing things in the face, and that's 90% of the way you deal with your problems in this game. Although, I do like that as an effective and direct method of resolving conflict.
Stabbing someone in the face?
There are not many situations you can't get out of by stabbing people in the face.
Remind me not to make you angry. You own several swords.
I think I prefer whips. On fire, or with things on the end, or...
I prefer chains.
Well, I think we can come to a compromise.
In bed. Oh man, okay, so we've been playing Animal Crossing. 2 of our villagers now have picked up the catchphrase, in bed.
How?
All the villagers have catchphrases, and occasionally they'll ask you for new ones. And you can just give them basically whatever, as long as it fits within the character requirement space. But they'll propagate randomly sometimes, so people will pick up other people's catchphrases. So we had this hippo named Harry. He's a hippopotamus with a mustache, saying in bed, and it was amazing. And then, like, our sports-addicted cat started picking it up, so he was like, man, I've been working out a lot. I look great in bed. Am I the only one who knows how to be awesome around here in bed?
I'm sure you are.
So, Zelda 2 is not one of my favorite games, one because of its huge focus on action over,
puzzles.
But because you don't get to do a lot of different things. We were talking about this before we started recording as a talking point, but the items in this don't really do a whole lot for you other than act as a key to a lock.
Yeah, the candle just lights up caves automatically when you go in, unlike in Zelda 1, where it shoots fire. None of them are as interesting as getting to throw a boomerang, and that stuns an enemy, giving you time to go up and attack it. Or bombs that can be used to destroy hidden areas, or do a lot of damage to an enemy.
That's actually one of the tenets of game design that I try really strongly to adhere to whenever I'm making something. That is, every single item you get should be able to be used in all circumstances. They may not be very useful in some circumstances, but they should be any, like in an action-oriented game, anything that you get should be able to be used as a weapon in addition to being able to allow you to progress.
Well, yes, I completely agree. That's in my opinion, that's basic game design. That's making good game design rather than, here's this thing. Well, what does it do to help me?
That said,
it does this one very specific thing. It opens this lock on Tuesday, the second week of the month,
well,
so long as the sun is out. But that's all it's for.
Well, what about Pokemon, a game I think we all love, where you have things like the Slift Scope or the key cards to elevators, that they're just there to help you get through a building.
And you know what? My favorite item in that game is the Pokeflute, because it has an additional effect.
It does, that's true.
I don't think it's a huge detriment to a game, or specifically that game, because those items aren't the core gameplay mechanic. Or they don't affect the core gameplay mechanic, or don't even attempt to. They're arbitrary locks, or arbitrary keys for locks. In this game, you never expand your scope of ability. And that gets really old when you're just stabbing things in the face over and over.
Yeah, I'm conversely, in Pokemon, your player scope of ability is changing and being upgraded every time you either catch a new Pokemon,
or
a Pokemon levels up, or you evolve a Pokemon or something. Every time one of those things changes, your scope of ability changes. The ability to open one door with one key card after completing that little thing. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it might be a little obtuse. I remember I had a couple of problems when I was doing my last playthrough. But those don't change that much. They unlock a progress point, but it isn't so much attached to what your character can do. So that doesn't make it that big of a problem.
I think that's kind of my point, is I'm saying you can have just keys that are just keys.
Yeah, but the problem is this doesn't give you anything that... It doesn't really ever expand the number of options you have available to you as the player. And that's the problem. Games are about progression in some manner, usually, unless they're like some sort of hipster game about anti-progression or something.
About a girl dying over and over no matter where you take her. Why are you allergic to peanuts? Why are there ninjas when I tell you there are no peanuts?
Well, the ninjas would have come later. She just died first.
That's true.
My biggest problem with this particular game is not necessarily the heavy focus on action, is that it gives you no different ways to engage in that action other than stabbing down later.
Yeah, I was going to say, what about those? You do get different sword techniques, and they make the game much easier and improve. They're extra verbs.
Technique, maybe? And there's like maybe two extra verbs. I guess spells, but they're more or less useless, so it doesn't really ever give you more ways to do things, which is disappointing considering so much of the game is focused on stabbing stuff.
And even Castlevania, there's a set of items, the gems, that are just keys, but you only get one of those at the time. The other ones, like the holy water, lets you destroy blocks and find hidden places, but it's also a weapon.
Well, and I prefer that type of item, but if you're only going to have keys and only going to have items that interact and they're not going to be inclusive in any manner between the two sets, then I prefer to have, you know, three or four, depending on the, maybe more, depending on the length of the game, of items that change the way you interact with the environment, or allow you to interact with the environment in different ways. Zelda 2 doesn't do a whole lot of that for you.
Oh, even Doom, that's a weird example, but it does have a nice progression. You start with a pistol, then you get a shotgun, then you get the chain gun, then you get, like, the laser chain gun.
No, you get a rocket launcher in there
somewhere
before you pick up the laser gun. I haven't been able to figure out. I don't remember if you get a minigun or a rocket first.
I think you can get the rocket first, but it's hidden.
The point is, even though they all have very similar... Actually, that's one of my big problems with Doom, is all the guns feel very similar when using them. But it at least gives you a slightly different way to interact with the environment and lots of different ways to do it over the course of the game. Zelda 2 doesn't.
It's just walk up, hit someone in the face.
Yeah, you can jump and stab differently, cast a spell, jump and stab. Are there bombs in this game? I don't think so.
No, but let's compare this to a game like Mario, which the only verbs you get are jump, run, and shoot fireballs, which all exist on the first level.
That is true.
Yes, but remember, Mario isn't adding additional items to load you down with additional things. Your repertoire never changes beyond jump, fireball, and run. Whereas this one is loading you down with so many different items, like the candle and whatever else it is, the hammer. Well, but you never get a chance to use them, and you're sitting there going, I have this item. I am not allowed to use this item.
I can see that objection. That's not really the problem I have with it, or the lack of a problem I have with Mario specifically, is that Mario is a very mechanics-based platformer that basically the difference you get is by increasing the challenges and number of challenges.
That's what I was going to say. The problem is Zelda, the challenge never really changes. It's always guys that are either throwing projectiles at you or trying to stab you and block your moves. Whereas Mario, the jumps get more complex, the enemies get more difficult to dispatch.
So maybe I was mistaken earlier in saying that I would prefer a variety of mechanics so much as I would prefer a changing challenge curve and a variety of mechanics preferably interspersed with that. I think that's really the biggest thing, is making you interact with the environment differently in some manner and giving you the options to do so.
That's a good point.
This is an early game, but I feel like Metroid did this better.
Well, Metroid doesn't give you a lot of extra verbs. It lets you jump higher or
freeze people.
Freeze people is a big one.
Shoot wavy lasers. Yeah, and Metroid doesn't do a whole lot in variety, at least not the original one, but by the time you get to Super Metroid, my god, you can do so many different things, and they're all amazing. But Zelda 2, again, kind of lacking in the either increasing challenge or giving you different ways to overcome challenges.
Feels less like an adventure than Zelda 1 did to me, too, because like I said, I always know where I'm going. I can see it from so far away. Even though Zelda 1 is kind of an overworld, it doesn't feel like one because all the screens are connected and they all have something going on.
Exactly. Well, and they all have, though, I guess that's summed up and they all have something going on. But, like, even Castlevania felt like more of an adventure to me because of the way you navigated and because you got so many different items to do things with. On the other hand, I do like Zelda 2 better because I felt like the action, which was kind of a core focus of Castlevania 2, was better implemented in this game, even if it did get repetitive.
I like Castlevania 2 more because even though the consequences, I think, for death in that game are a little light, I think the consequences in this game are far too heavy. Especially when you're supposed to be adventuring and going around. A lot of the difficulty comes from trying to get through these very elaborate obstacle courses, and if you fail too many times, you have to start from the beginning. It gets to the point where you're just repeating the same challenge over and over again instead of getting to see new content.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem.
I actually remember in my first playthrough, near the last dungeon, I kept having to restart over and over and over and walk back to the same damn stump every time. It's an okay game. $5 on the virtual console, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be a little much. I'm thinking maybe two, if that. Oh no. I would say that you should play it if you like Zelda games and want to see where they avoided a misstep, I guess.
I kind of think you can skip it, even if you're a big Zelda fan.
I think you can just skip it in general. I mean, it's a piece of history, but it was an evolutionary dead end.
Well, I don't think it was a dead end. I think they didn't know what they wanted to be, an action game or an exploration game, and they couldn't really mesh the two as well as some later games did. So,
okay, so how do we think we can improve this game? Because that's something I'm really not sure of.
Minimap.
Yeah, well, that's actually my biggest problem for early exploration games is lack of a minimap.
In this game, I never had a problem exploring. I never felt lost. And that's what the minimap is there to aid you with, right?
I occasionally did. Especially in the first dungeon. Like I said, it was so disorienting and non-Zelda dungeon-like that I was lost in the first dungeon for a while, so.
From listening to you guys, the thing that I would be most keen on for them to improve is having challenge scale to the players. In the first dungeon, maybe not have so many people who can just block your sword strikes, or maybe make a guy who can do that be the boss, and work your way into the more and more challenging guys, maybe people who can take more than one hit, or something like that.
So a slightly differently shaped difficulty curve, is what you're saying.
Yes, actually having a difficulty, you know, curve.
Yeah, as opposed to a difficulty line.
Or as to, you know, you have the difficulty curve starting at the top of the graph and then just hitting a certain point and just falling to the ground.
Well, and really the difficulty never changes. You just get one more ability that's obscenely useful. I think my biggest thing with this is, well, actually, quick travel. I don't think they should have penalized you by forcing you to go back to the very beginning and force you to work your way through the exact same obstacles that you've already proven that you can go through.
That's my biggest problem with the game. I think if they fix that, and I really think they should take out the overworld. Maybe just make it a side-scroller where you just go through.
juxtaposition of the two is kind of awkward. Now that you've mentioned it, I don't really think that there's any purpose for an overworld. Although I do like overworlds, this is not a game for one.
The only purpose I can think is there are sort of random encounters, and you can grind those for experience if you want to. And I think that's an interesting option.
But combat's just not that interesting.
Well, and Castlevania proved that you could do that without actually having to have random encounters. Castlevania 2, actually.
Yeah, but Castlevania 2 doesn't have an overworld map.
Exactly. I'm saying this supports your theory that it could not have one and probably be a better game for it. And as I harped on a lot, it needs to give you different ways to interact with the environment or change the types of challenges you encounter. Something. It lacks variety, and is too long a game. It's not even a very long game, but it's too long a game for the lack of variety it has.
All right. So that's Zelda 2. I think our diagnosis is skip it unless you're really interested in Zelda history.
Yep, pretty much.
So now that we've faced our Doom and Zelda 2, I think it's time to play Doom 2 as our reward.
Doom!
Doom-de-doom!
Next time on Last Time, we'll be shooting demons on hell. Earth. Hell on Earth? Next time on Last Time, hell on Earth.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2013.
All of the video games and other media mentioned herein is copyright of its respective owners. That may not be obvious.
You can contact us at ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. And if you want to contact one of us individually, I am Zach@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Tyler@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Or Jeremy, Jeremy@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
You can visit our show page if you don't want to hit the blog at gplus.2/lasttimeonvideogames.
If you do want to visit the blog, lasttimeonvideogames.com.
And we've got an RSS feed. Probably click on it, or one of the other buttons on there.
We're also on iTunes.
And the Twitters.
Twitter is @LTOVG.
Unlike all the games we play on this show, we cannot be emulated.
Right now.
What?
Anyway.
It.
This pause brought to you by Cherry Coke. Cherry Coke.